This podcast is free and it's accessible to everyone thanks to support from listeners like you. If you value this show, please consider supporting its production by donating to our home, KUOW. It only takes a minute to give, and you'll be helping to support the production of this podcast. Make a donation at kuow.org or follow the link in the show notes. And thanks.
You're listening to Soundside. I'm Libby Denkman. A funny thing happens after people get elected to public office. Bold campaign rhetoric tends to fade away as the realities of governing set in. That appears to be the case with five new members of Seattle City Council who said during their campaigns that they would like to audit the city's budget to find waste and redundancies before raising or adding new taxes. But now, as a $230 million budget deficit looms, the realities of a time-consuming and expensive audit process are leading these new council members to back off the idea. And my next guest says they will likely have to take a hard look at something they did not want to do, adding new revenue through taxes and addressing the structural problems that make city budgets so unpredictable and unsustainable. Kevin Schofield has covered the city council for years as a reporter and the founder of SCC Insight. He writes a weekly column for the South Seattle Emerald called Weekend Reads, and he's also a member of KUOW's board of directors, which does not make any editorial calls or work directly with KUOW's newsroom. Hi, Kevin. Thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you for inviting me. Looking forward to talking about budget. I haven't done this for a while.
Yeah, let's just get wonky, okay? Let's just dive into it. Yeah. The city's looking at a budget deficit to the tune of $230 million. How did we get here, Kevin?
Well, in some ways, this is something that's coming along for a long time. The city's budget is really an artifact of just a small portion of the budget, what's called the general fund. This is unrestricted money that the city council and the mayor can spend on pretty much anything that they want to spend, as long as it's, you know, a legal thing for government to spend money on. The rest of the money in the $7.1 billion budget all comes with strings attached. So if we get a federal grant that says we got to spend it on, if the state legislature allows the city to institute various taxes, but they also say, well, okay, we want that to be spent on, you know, the things that, you know, benefit whoever's paying that taxes. The general fund, this $230 million of unrestricted money, is where the problem is. And it's because the general fund sources, there's really, most of the money comes from about four sources of money. And the one big one is property taxes. Another big one is utility taxes. So, and then there's a couple business-related things, like what they call the business and operations tax. And then there's sales taxes, right? So the first two of those sort of track with kind of the general population of the city. As population grows and, you know, amount of business and housing we have grow, those tend to go up. Right. It was a ticking time bomb. Then we hit the pandemic and our, you know, the two economic based sources of general fund revenues tanked for a while, and they're still kind of slowly working their way back. And then the two that are based, you know, on just general population and buildings and infrastructure just couldn't keep up with inflation. So while if you look at the, you know, the actual, you know, absolute value of the dollars, they're still increasing. They're increasing slower than the cost of everything we want to spend that money on. So their buying power year over year is now is getting reduced since the pandemic happened. And that's caused basically a rift. It's caused a gap between how much money we have to spend in, you know, in unrestricted general fund dollars and the cost of the things that we have been spending on, and at some level make commitments long term to spending. We don't want to sort of be hitting the gas and hitting the brakes year to year on a lot of human services programs, on a lot of, you know, transportation programs and maintenance programs and things like that. We want a lot of, we really need a lot of them to be consistent, right? But when our income, our revenue sources aren't consistent, then that becomes a big problem around them.
But Kevin, what about all that money that was flowing from the federal government during the pandemic? I mean, didn't that help float a lot of the problems that cities and municipalities all over the country were facing as inflation was rising?
A couple of things happened with that. It was one-time funding for, that really lasted over 2 years, and that was great. That definitely helped fill in the gap on a lot of the missing revenue for a couple of years. But there are a couple of problems. One problem is that you really have to make sure you don't spend that money on things that you really want. Well, you don't spend it on new investments that are everybody's going to expect to be long-term, right? You can spend it on new things that are one-offs, right? One-time expenditures on things. But to spend it on something that everyone is going to say, oh, well, you know, 2 years from now when the money runs out, we're going to want to continue. We have to be able to continue that program. And the mayor and city council weren't really so good on that point. And the other part is, you know, it's a two-year stopgap with the hope that after 2 years, the revenue that was replacing comes back. And our economy just hasn't come back that quickly here. So there's still a gap. And the expectation is by 2027, hopefully we'll be back to where we originally would have been if the pandemic hadn't happened with sales taxes and B&O taxes, but we're not quite there yet, right? So part of this $230 million gap is because the one-time funding that we got from the federal government isn't there anymore, and the economic-based general fund revenues have not fully recovered.
So let's talk about cuts first. We're going to get to revenues later in the conversation. If the city is looking to cut in order to recover from this deficit, where would those cuts come from?
So there's about $1.7 billion in general unrestricted funds that the city and city elected officials, our city council members and the mayor actually have control over how that money gets spent. $1.53 billion of it, 90% of it, is in seven departments in the city. And there's another 35 of them, which share about the other $200 million. So the vast majority of it, 90% of it, is in seven departments. If I can just throw in a kind of random analogy here, Willie Sutton, the bank robber, they asked him when he finally got caught, why did you rob banks? And he said, well, that's where the money is. Right? And here, you know, if we want to fill a $230 million gap by cutting, I can tell you 35 departments to not go looking for the money because it's just not there. If we have to make really big cuts, it has to come from police department, fire department, human services, parks department, SDOT.
And human services, we should say, is where a lot of the homelessness spending happens at the city level. A lot of that goes to the King County Regional Homelessness Authority. Yeah. So we're not just talking like things that are easy for people to think about scaling back on.
None of these are easy. If you really wanted to say, okay, we have to cut this much money, you could say, okay, we're just going to do a flat across the board cut of this, you know, I think it comes out to like 13%, something like that, of the general fund budget to close that gap. But then immediately say, well, okay, we may want to exempt some departments from that, right? Because they're a priority. But then if you step back and look at it, the departments with the best arguments for being exempted are the seven where all the money is. Police department. We got a whole bunch of elected officials last year and 3 years ago who ran on a campaign of we're going to, you know, refund the police department. They're not going to cut the police department. Fire department, for, you know, similar reasons, it's a major public safety department there. Human services, we have a commitment to the regional homeless authority for now. So there isn't a ton of money there. Parks department is really interesting. They've got a parks levy, which is a separate tax that is specifically restricted to go towards parks. But one of the things that was written into that when the voters approved it was that the city has to spend a certain minimum amount of general fund dollars on parks on top of the parks levy money.
There has to be a matching amount from the city's general fund. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you say, like, for example, that this idea that you would cut maybe 13% across the board spending cuts for each department in the city. That is, you know, the idea that you say would be really hard to pursue effectively if certain departments were exempt. And as we've talked about, this new city council is more moderate than in the past. And if you weren't going to get significant cuts out of the 2020 city council, which included Shama Sawant and, you know, Teresa Mosqueda and other very progressive members, you're certainly not going to get significant police department cuts out of the current city council, which, as you say, really ran on the idea of repairing relations with the SPD and fully funding the police department. So, you know, these cuts are going to be really hard to find. What about this idea that a lot of council members floated during the debates that I moderated, at least at KUOW, that there was going to be this big audit that was going to find waste and, you know, potential of fat to trim in the city budget? Where has that idea gone?
Well, I think we've heard in the last month some of the city council members, now that the newly elected ones, now that they've gone into office, and they've discovered the kind of the reality of it. And part of it is sort of what I was just saying, right? I can tell you 35 departments in the city that is not worth spending any time on auditing them if you're trying to find $230 million because their budgets are just too small. The amount of effort that would go in, it's like, you know, looking behind the couch cushions for pocket change, right? You're not going to find enough there that's really going to make a difference to the scale of their problem that they're trying to solve. If you wanted to audit it, you could do a thorough audit on sort of these seven big departments, but you know, then you're back around to the same place again, right?
The same political problem.
Political problem.
So let's move to the revenue side, because it does sound like the juice isn't worth the squeeze on this audit idea. Folks have really backed off of that. Surprise, surprise. It was a campaign promise. And many times that happens once folks are actually in elected office. When we look at the revenue side of things, you talk about the ways that raising taxes would be really difficult and, you know, in some cases, like with property taxes, impossible without the legislature at the state level stepping in. So the city is really just restricted in all of these different ways in the way it can bridge this budget gap. You know, my final question to you, Kevin, is there were ideas for brand new taxes that could bring in some more money that a progressive work group came up with. And those included a new capital gains tax in Seattle proper and a high CEO pay ratio tax, which would be like taxing companies that have a really big gap between what their CEO makes and what the average worker makes. I mean, is that a solution? Is that something that could get us across this maybe $230, maybe $140 million gap?
So the high CEO pay ratio tax is certainly not going to do that. It's a feel-good thing. You know, everybody's going to vote for that because they'll think, you know, this is great. Let's stick it to those CEOs. But it's not going to come up with $230 or even $140 million. It's going to be nowhere near sort of that big. A capital gains tax could get a lot closer to doing that. But again, some of the things we talked about, you know, that's not going to be an immediate solution, because even if it went through, they will certainly find enough people locally who don't like it to sign a petition to get it as a voter referendum. So if the city passed a capital gains tax as part of their budget package this fall, it would almost certainly become a voter referendum. And even if it would survive in, you know, very progressive Seattle, and it's a very good chance it would survive a voter referendum, there's certainly going to be enough people locally who would sign a petition to get it on the ballot, right? So if it's passed next November by the city council, it's going to be a voter referendum sometime the following spring. In the meantime, as soon as that petition is filed with enough signatures on it, the new tax gets put on hold, right? So suddenly they're back to having a gap in the budget. So for them to be able to actually budget based upon a new tax before it's gone through that whole legislative and voter referendum process is a really dicey thing for them to do. They're going to want to take it. If they're smart, they'd take it in two steps. They'd pass the tax, but they'd not actually count on any of those revenues until a year or two later. And in fact, you know, quite honestly, it would take them a year or two to put in place all the infrastructure to collect the tax anyway. So it's just the capital gains tax isn't going to solve the 2025 problem. Maybe a 2027 problem, but not a 2025 problem.
What about the jumpstart tax? I mean, when I've interviewed former city council member Teresa Mosqueda, who was a big champion of that payroll tax on large companies in Seattle, she said that one of her biggest worries has been that the city would further raid jumpstart to balance the budget. Mm-hmm. There are limits right now on how that money can be spent, but there is a chunk that's available to go to the general fund. What's going to happen there with jumpstart, or what could happen?
So the current estimate is that the payroll tax this year is going to bring in about $300 million in revenues, which could be all unrestricted. The city council passed a legislation, the last city council, not this one, the last city council passed legislation that restricted much of that money so that it was in general fund. Certainly this city council can undo that. They can pass, you know, anything to be passed by ordinance can be reversed by ordinance as well. So they could,
yeah,
they
under
could,
the current restrictions, it's supposed to go to things like affordable housing,
yeah,
things like that.
Yeah. Right now, you know, a bunch of it's going to go to affordable housing. It's going to go to Green New Deal, economic development initiative. About $32 million is going to go to an economic revitalization fund to help with the ongoing sort of recovery from the pandemic. But like $137 million, a big chunk of it goes to housing. But one of the things that they wrote into that, because they were passing it, you know, in the heat of the pandemic, knowing that they had big revenue shortfalls, was they said a certain slice of it could go over to the general fund for the first few years to help offset general fund revenue shortfalls. This year, it's about $90 million that's going over there. And the rest of the money, the $300 million that's coming in, is all basically spoken for all these other things, right? So two parts. Number one, so far, that $90 million isn't spoken for anything else for next year. So the city council and the mayor could immediately say, okay, we're just going to continue with that $90 million moving over the general fund. And they wouldn't have broken any promise really to anybody else because that money has not been spoken for anything else. So I guess you could say the first $90 million is the easiest, right? We still got $140 million we have to find, but that's a start on it.
And I mean, should we assume that that is probably going to happen at the city level? I mean, at this point... Yeah,
I'd say the smart Vegas money says that. Yeah,
yeah.
I would bet that that's probably going to happen.
So that makes the deficit, as you say, more like $140 million, a little bit more manageable.
Yeah, it's a little closer, right? So then of the rest of the payroll tax money, the rest of that $300 million, like I said, it is spoken for. So you could just move it over. And some people say, yeah, we just move the rest of it over. But they'd be breaking promises, right? You know, it's just at that point, it's your choice of cuts, right? Are you going to cut those things or are you going to cut other things in the budget, right? If they're looking for a way to get through this without cutting expenses, that's not a solution. Because again, that money is already spoken.
Okay, so where does that leave us? I mean, what are you going to be watching for? The budget season doesn't really ramp up until the fall, but how the heck can they move forward then? Is it going to be a little piecemeal here and there, small cuts from every department, maybe finding a little way to carve out more from Jumpstart, maybe, you know, adding the idea of these other new taxes? Like, how can they possibly find the money?
So I think the first big question they're going to have to face is, do we try to do a long-term structural solution now, or do we kick the can down the road and do a one-time fix? If they kick the can down the road and do a one-time fix, they've got some money sitting in the city's two reserve funds that they could take a little bit out of that and use some of that to help fill a little bit more of that $140 million gap. They could do a little bit of tweaks on the expense side. They could do a little bit of tweaks on the revenue side, and they might get pretty close. Again, it'd be one-off. You know, they can trim a bunch of things, and it'll be hard. It'll still be really, really hard.
Kevin Schofield is a City Hall reporter and the founder of SCC Insight, covering the Seattle City Council. He's also a member of KUOW's Board of Directors, which does not have any editorial role at KUOW's newsroom. And he has a weekly column in the South Seattle Emerald. And the weekly column is called Weekend Reads. Kevin, thank you so much. I mean, this stuff is so wonky, and I am just so happy to have a wonky soulmate to talk to about this and really like dive into all these different avenues, all these different problems. It really strikes me how easy it is during elections for candidates to talk big about how they would solve problems. And when the rubber meets the road is when they are actually there and they have to make those decisions. And you've really laid out, you know, great how difficult those will be. Thank you.
Thank you.
And you can find Kevin's recent reporting on the budget deficit over at postalley.org. Thanks for listening to Soundside. And hey, this show is only possible because listeners support us. If you are able to give right now, check out the show notes for a link to donate. And don't forget, you can listen live on KUOW 94.9 FM Seattle at noon and 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday, or anytime online at KUOW.org.
Seattle in the 90s. A tidal wave of iconic music roars out of this sleepy city and launches a pop culture revolution. Here's a story you haven't heard. Let the Kids Dance is a new podcast about the rise and fall of Seattle's teen dance ordinance, the law that made it illegal for young people to go to concerts. A story of moral panic, grassroots activism, and an unstoppable music community that fought for its freedom. Listen to Let the Kids Dance from KUOW and the NPR Network.